Welcome to the XBLA Fancast, episode 4 for Tuesday, March 15th, 2011. I'm John, and I'm joined again by Tyler and Andrew. And this week we have a special guest with Steven.
Hey, how's it going?
Want to introduce yourself, guys?
Sure. I'm Andrew, Twitter at @twitspermatic.
I am Tyler. I wish I went to PAX Cameron. And I'm the associate editor of Words at xblafans.com.
And I'm Steve. I'm the guest. I'm a contributing editor for xblafans.com. Twitter is The Married Gamer. And I was very much at PAX East.
I really wish I'd been able to make it to PAX East, too. So I totally know what you're feeling, Tyler.
Oh, yeah. Everyone on Twitter was talking about it, how they got to meet all these great game developers and see these great games. And I was just sitting at home on my couch playing same old games, longing, looking at my computer. Oh, I wish I was at PAX.
Yeah, I spent the whole week, you know, playing some Dragon Age, which, as much fun as that is, I wish I'd been, you know, walking around just accidentally bumping into the people who made it.
Yeah, exactly. One day I will be there. One day.
Yeah, it's one of the things I've been, like, you know, on my to-do list. I've been to E3, but I've never been to one of the PAXs, so I'm hoping maybe PAX Prime this year. Alright, yeah. So we got a lot of games to cover this week.
Yes, we do.
PAX might not have been, you know, as packed for the retail stuff, but there was so much with XBLA.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of small downloadable games there being featured, and that's where I spent most of my time. How about you, Steve?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get my hands on some of the retail stuff, but the lines were anywhere from 2 to 7 hours. So, no, I enjoyed the little stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was telling Tyler, actually, before the show, is that even if I wanted to check out retail, like, it just didn't make sense, like, time to value to stand in line for 4 hours to play Portal 2, even though I want to play Portal.
Oh, I didn't even think Portal 2 was on every.
I'm gonna make a lot of enemies, and I'll share this quick story. I was there exhibiting for Sacred Heart University. I work for their admissions office, and I was able to exhibit all weekend. But I had the exhibitor's pass. I was in there early, and Sunday morning I was able to check out SWTOR and L.A. Noire before they opened the doors.
Nice. Oh, wow, that's something to brag about for sure.
Yep. So I'm sorry, everyone, but I'm not sorry because it was awesome.
It was like that right. That short, nervous laugh of like, I really do hate you.
Nah, I'm not gonna hate.
No, that is definitely something awesome. I wish I could have seen some of those retail games, even if the lines were very long. But there were also quite a number of XBLA games there. What stood out to you guys? Before we really dive into all the games that we saw, what was the first thing that stood out to you guys?
I don't know about you, Steven, but the XBLA game that stood out to me the most was one that I didn't even know anything about going into it. It was at the EA booth, and it was called Gatling Gears. And that may be because I was a dual stick enthusiast.
Missiles!
I picked it up, and it's basically like Assault Heroes, but 10 times better, and Assault Heroes is awesome to begin with. So
wow.
That was my like surprise pick of the XBLA games, like one of my favorite ones, and that's what every one of my friends who was there with me attending with me said too, that game was surprisingly good, and we went and played that one like 2, 3, 4 times because it was that good.
Okay. Excellent. For me personally, I knew about a few. I spent some time with most of the developers that I catching up on some things, but the one that really hit for me was Bastion. I told the developer standing next to me, I will pay you any amount of money to buy this game. We'll get into more of the specifics, but it's basically the perfect game for me, being a action RPG fan as well as a sports game fan. I'll get into that later.
Okay.
All right. Very cool, guys. So there were a lot of stuff that I knew ahead of time, and then there were a couple big surprises for me. Like, I had no clue that Toy Soldiers was going to come out with a new game. Did either of you guys get to check that out?
Oh, I spent a good probably 2 hours over the course of the 2 to 3 days playing that game and talking to a variety of people involved with that game. That was definitely one of the best ones on the floor, in my opinion.
All right. Well, is there anything you can tell us about it? Because, I mean, I really honestly don't know much yet.
It has complete online multiplayer, which is awesome. So, yeah, you can team up with a friend, go through the entire campaign, or locally, if that's your thing, too. The vehicles in that act differently than the last ones. The last one, you jump in a tank, and you could basically, what I did was sit at spawn points and just hammer the tank, the shot until the little soldiers stopped coming out of that house. And sometimes I'd even park it in front of the door and they just immediately get ran over.
Yeah.
This one works on like a battery meter. Like the second you get off of this little tank pad where it spawns, you have basically like 2 minutes of battery life before that thing dies.
That's probably pretty smart.
You can actually go back and like get on another pad somewhere, like a different tank or something, and recharge your battery if you're strategic enough about it. And when you're in the helicopter, there's little batteries that are floating in the air you can go pick up, or you can re-land on a helipad wherever you can find one. And that was pretty awesome because it discouraged people from playing a game like me, like the cheapest way possible. And there's also like when you get these multipliers, these 40x multipliers for killing like 40 soldiers in like, you know, 5 seconds or whatever it is, you get this little bar to fill up at the bottom of the screen. And once you get it so high, I think it's called a berserker. I'm not sure what the term was exactly, but what that did was randomly generate a power up, sort of like Mario Kart with like a question mark, you know, and it just sits there and like cycles through and it slows up and it stops and you have this power up and you hit the Y button to use it. And there was this really cool one where it was like a super like Rambo guy and a G.I. Joe like case would fall from the sky and he'd break out like the packaging and you'd take over this guy with a bazooka on his arm who was indestructible. You could stand right in front of a tank and take a shell right to the face and it's no big deal. And you could sit there and just keep spamming the trigger. You get like 20 seconds with this guy and it is awesome. You could just go wreak havoc on anything in the level.
So basically a Terminator?
And yeah, basically. But he looked just like a Rambo, like your typical 80s action movie hero. And, yeah, it's a pretty cool game. And one other thing I want to say is the control. I don't know if you guys did this on the first one, but you can control, like, mortars and howitzer mm-hmm. shells. The control on the shells in this one is much better. There's, like, I think it's, like, a level 2 mortar, which I found mortars useless on the first game. But the level 2 mortar on this game, like, turns on its side and lets you shoot it like a cannon. And then it turns into what is very similar to if you've used a Sentinel missile in the James Bond games. You, like, control this little crosshair and you steer it, like, into planes, tanks, whatever you want. And each weapon has a primary and a secondary function, like the tear gas or whatever, is fireworks that spin around the bottom of it. So anything that gets close to it gets burned with these fireworks, but it also shoots like these little mortar rounds kind of that explode and do like splash damage of chemical pollution or whatever. And you can fire both of those at the same time with each trigger, but if you aren't the one controlling it, then the computer isn't smart enough to like totally take full advantage of that for you. So it really like wants you to be the one in charge of things. It really rewards you for being the guy who does all the dirty work.
How is the difficulty compared to the first one?
I didn't think it was hard, but that's because I really played the first one a lot. I jumped right in, knew exactly how to build towers. He didn't have to tell me anything. He was surprised. He was like, wow, okay, you've played this before. And I immediately started selling things I didn't like, and I was like, nah, I want this here. And I immediately looked for the tank, but then when I got in, I was like, oh no, I can't.
Can't be cheap and sit at the spawn point.
I have to come up with a new strategy, and that's where I learned all these other things. He's like, alright, now I can tell you something.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was a pretty fun game. They're shooting for a summer release, he told me. Price points, he said, would pretty much stay the same with what they did the first time. He wouldn't give me an exact quote, but I kind of said, like, so Summer of Arcade, 1,200 points, and he just kind of, like, smirked a little, and he's like, I can't say nothing right now.
Yeah,
so
I guarantee that's what they're hoping for.
Yeah,
he said that was all up to Microsoft, but if the first one sold well, which it did, then there should be no doubt that the second one will not follow a very similar line of getting distributed.
Yeah, I know when this one was announced, it was pretty big on Twitter. because, I mean, I was just following packs the whole time, and I was like, holy crap, they're doing a new Toy Soldiers? I'm like, is it just DLC? And then I was like, oh, wow, it's a full game. I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah. And it is a full game. It feels completely different. It doesn't feel like you're just buying like the second iteration of the game. It feels like a new. It definitely warrants another $15 for it.
That's absolutely awesome. Yeah, and speaking of those, you know, kind of tower defense kind of hybrid games, did you get a chance to check out Trench?
Getting some visuals on it. It was pretty. I didn't get to get much hands on, unfortunately. But it did look like basically a. What I was seeing was it almost seemed like mechs. I know they're not basing it on mechs, but they're mechs. They're machines that walk around with guns on them. but the backstory is like one guy is in this like fake future. One guy is smart enough to have created the mechs, and another guy was smart enough to create television that thinks on its own, and so the television thing is, it has a mind of its own as it's fighting against these people. So you've got to use these trenches walking trenches to kill the TVs.
So television's the enemy in this one.
It seems to be the case, yeah. And I mean. It is the next Double Fine, yeah. So you know that they've got a hand on a lot of successful stuff. I was a little surprised when I realized it was a Double Fine and getting my eyes on it. It's a twin stick type of shooter. Above a view, so you're seeing like the whole field and you're just the small gunner. But it had cooperative play. It did seem pretty friendly, and it was attractive, but I didn't. I was running around a lot.
I did play it for about 5 minutes, and then I handed the controller to my friend I was there with, and I spent most of the time at the Double Fine booth just talking with the developers. But for the 5 minutes I did play, it looked amazing. It played awesome. It was really fun. I didn't get into the tower defense elements too much because I just wanted to control the mech and do everything myself. So I'm sure there was a lot of depth there that I missed, but from what I did play, it was awesome.
The footage that I saw it kind of reminded me of Monday Night Combat with the way the characters moved in like the tower defense.
Yeah, very similar. I would say that's a decent comparison. Cool.
Yeah, I noticed the graphics looked really nice, and it had, you know, that quirky Double Fine humor, and then I think the engine they said they're using is actually the Brutal Legend engine, which is pretty cool to see.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, even that game is still, you know, living a little bit.
Not quite dead.
Well, talking about tower defense games, I got my hands on Orcs Must Die. This was, it's basically, to simplify it, if anyone's had their hands on Dungeon Defenders, it's similar to that. You've got orcs coming in from one section trying to get into, like, this kind of big, I didn't get a specific on, they're trying to get into a portal, kind of, like, break into your world. So you are in control of someone, basically, in charge of protecting these castles that they have built to keep the orcs out of the other realm. And it's very aware of itself, you know, so it's self-aware. So it is pretty funny. It is amusing to see what kind of traps they give you. So you're it's a third person view, over the shoulder, basically. You have your main, melee weapon as well as a bow. And you're be given a few traps, and you earn the money to build the traps by killing orcs. And there's traps like a catapult that an orc will walk across and then get shot into a lava pit, and you'll get bonus points for having them like burn. So it was very animated, very cartoony. You'd get a few times your character would say a few things like, yeah, well, you take that. But yeah.
That's one of the games, actually, that I've had the pleasure of playing. I got to fly out, you know, and visit Robot Entertainment last month, and got to play this before it was shown at PAX. And honestly, I had a blast with it. So, I mean, it was something I really enjoyed. And it has a lot of, you know, quirkiness to it, and it's really comedic. I mean, when you kill the, like, bigger ogre troll guys, you know, it literally kind of looks like a bunch of hams are getting thrown around, because, I mean, it's getting sliced up. It doesn't have, you know, that kind of bloody, gory feel. It just has, you know, that fun. And I'd love just being able to watch all the different kind of traps and how they could interact. Like, you know, you could put two traps, like a tar trap that would slow them down, and then have, you know, a spike trap that shoots out of the walls and hits them more often because now they can't move. And you could put some archers up at the top, and then you could get, you know, like a catapult trap and shoot them straight up over the archers. They'd then look up and, you know, just start picking them apart in midair. And, I mean, it was just fun to see all the interactions between all of that.
What's the release on that? Do we know?
Summer.
Summer?
I believe.
Okay, maybe. I don't believe they confirmed with me whether they even have it specifically. They had said that they are definitely planning to bring it to consoles, but they didn't have a confirmation. Or is it definitely confirmed for XBLA, or is it right now just PC?
Yeah. I got to talk pretty extensively with them about that. And basically, it's something where they're not exactly sure where it's going to be able to go yet, because the way, you know, Microsoft works is you have to be an approved developer to be able to get something on XBLA, or you have to go through Microsoft. So depending on who they decide, you know, if they want to self-publish or if they want to do, you know, through, like, just say EA Partners or something like that, you know, it depends on what you can do. So, I mean, they've got to, you know, crunch the numbers down the road and figure out whether it makes more sense for them to, you know, try to self-publish, try to find a publishing partner, try to go through Microsoft, which normally Microsoft wants exclusivity, which means it can't go on PSN, it can't go on, you know, Mac. So, I mean, it's one of those things where they don't really know exactly how they're going to do it yet, because they've been focusing on the game a lot, and they weren't really, you know, at liberty to talk about the business end yet.
I should also, I want to also mention that having the bow and arrow is very fun, but also you can zoom in and get a first-person view while using the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
So that was a very nice touch, very, very surprising, and I remember just audibly going, oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, they're nice, friendly guys. I think they definitely want to be on the consoles.
Yeah. And I'm really excited for when this one finally hits. I had a blast when I played it.
Yeah, I'm excited just from hearing you guys talk about it. So I can't wait to try it myself.
Did any of you guys happen to get a chance to play Skulls of the Shogun?
Yeah.
Yep.
I did. I talked to developers for a while. I didn't think I was going to play it, but they went out of their way to add me and a friend into a game, and we started playing it, and it was a fun game. I just didn't think it demoed well. It was a real-time strategy, and it took probably 25 minutes to play one match. And, I mean, after 5 minutes, we understood what the point was. We didn't know if we wanted to sit there and actually fight to the death with these other two guys that we were playing with. And it was basically like a game of Risk, you know, where you just basically go until one person takes over everything.
Yeah.
It was like that. You're these little skull samurai-looking guys, and you move towards a guy and you choose if you want to attack, if you want to hunt like these rice paddy fields to make some money, because in that game, rice is money. And it was fun, but it didn't demo
well.
That's
not racist.
That's something that you got to like sit down and play by yourself, single player, for about an hour before you really understand the logistics behind everything. So what did you think, Steven? Did you have a better experience?
I actually did. I'm glad you got the multiplayer, because I did the single player.
Oh yeah.
So that just worked out.
Yeah.
Weird. I had about a half hour with them, speaking directly with the developer as I was playing through the game. And they're still 6 months out of completion on this, and it does show. It's not with the big things. It's very well put together. Their tutorial does pretty much answer the questions I had as I was going through it. but it kind of seemed like they were trying to make sure they didn't put too much on the player right away. And it caused me to feel like I could learn more in the tutorial a little bit faster. So, you know, I did make sure that that I told them that, but I like the design. It's an approachable real time strategy, you know, our turn based strategy. It's pretty easy to get a handle on it, and I think their little quips, you know, they do have the characters doing some dialogue. The main samurai leader is, you know, dead. He gets to the underworld, and there's a line of, you know, so many dead soldiers, it's going to take him 512 years to get to the front. And he's like, oh, no, screw that. No, I ain't waiting. So it's a simple story, but it does seem to be interesting. And when talking with the developers, they told me that they have one of the guys who is working on it has a buddy who speaks in like a fake accent. That they felt was very, very close. It sounds real. So they had him do the entire dialogue of the game. So it's, they're not really saying anything, but he's just, oh, blah, 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 blah. And knowing that it sounds great.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say about the multiplayer, which I thought was different, and I don't know if it's different in a good or bad way, because I'm not really a RTS enthusiast, but when you march your main little shogun guy forward and he gets killed, your entire army dies. So I thought, you know, this guy's the biggest, baddest ass on my team. I want to put him at the front lines and just start swinging my hammer, you know? And I put him up there, and about four turns later, that guy was dead and every skull around me died. So I don't know if people will go for that or not.
Yeah, I did an interview with them a month or two back, and it kind of sounded like Advance Wars meets almost chess. In the sense mm-hmm. that you kind of have a king.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was also like your king is also your queen at the same time, and it's your most powerful person. Because, I mean, that's how you get the skulls and how you, you know, uh-huh. enter that, like, special mode or whatnot. Where when you kill the enemies, you can pick up their skulls, and then I forgot exactly what happens. Do either of you guys remember?
They kind of hover around yeah. and they give you extra power.
Yes. And it was one of those yeah. things that it was a really cool concept because, I mean, I love Advance Wars. I used to play that a bunch on, you know, like Game Boy. And it was great. And so seeing something like this, you know, that kind of harkens back to that but adds its own, you know, unique character is a lot of fun to me. And then one of the big things he told me they were doing that was different was instead of, you know, having grid-based movement where, you know, you can only move, you know, to like the adjacent square.
It was wide open.
And you can't move diagonal, even though you're like, this is a shorter distance. And, you know, it's like not on a mountain. This one's, you know, a path. It's like, yeah. instead of that, they just made, you know, like a radial, you know, kind of thing where like you have a circle and anywhere within that circle, you can move to that spot, which is kind of cool yep. to see.
Yeah, that was definitely cool. Because you didn't have to waste the first 10 turns just like plotting which square you want to move to next. There was basically a circle around every guy and when at least the map I was playing, and when you walk to the edge of the circle, that pretty much guaranteed that your next turn you were going to be in combat.
They did do a nice part about that that distance and movement is that a lot of games will say, you know, like you're going to move here. Okay, are you done? Is this where you want to move? Good. As soon as you're done, that's it. You're locked into place. The nice part about it is no matter what point in the battle, you can continue to go back to your guys and subtly move them. Yeah. That radius stays the same. So if you move your archer, set him up, and you think you've got a perfect shot on a guy, but you're still far enough away, and you realize you're actually too far away, you can still move them again. And then after he attacks, you can move him somewhere else if you need to. So it adds a lot more strategy, and I think that's gonna be a polarizing thing for the game. I think a lot of people are going to find that very attractive and approachable. So it could be for a bunch of people, but for me, I don't know. I sometimes like the traditional stuff too. So I want to see the final build. I think I definitely got enough hands on that. I am interested. I will likely buy it when it comes out.
Awesome. And I know right next to them, there was another indie studio out in Seattle, and they did Fallen Frontier. Did either of you guys get a chance to look at that?
Yeah, I did. they were actually they were both pretty buddy buddy, which was nice. I was supposed to meet with Skulls of the Shogun, and they just said, "Hey, by the way, make sure you go over and check out Fallen Frontier." And I did get about an hour with the game. I basically just went through the tutorial with the developer or the head of marketing, but they're real nice guys. It's best way I guess to describe it is that it's a co-op Shadow Complex.
Mm-hmm.
Now it doesn't have the amount of money behind it that you know that a Shadow Complex did, but they did good work on this game. It's basically cel-shaded, so if you think of like a it's a side-scrolling through the map two-player, but man, it looked good. what they did in designing the levels is that the levels are they have both small and large breaks in the level. So if you're jumping through what looks to be stairs and you need to double jump, you're basically jumping to the stairs and then you press jump again to like climb up. Now you don't see a visual response to that, but it just allows for movement through the level a little bit better, and also strategy. If you're above an enemy and there is walls breaking you visually, they can't see you. The only time they will see you is if they have direct line of sight. But then if they have seen you and you start trying to run away, you've got to be behind maybe a three-layer wall rather than these one-layer stairs. It was really, really deep in the way that they designed that. They also allow for the full map. You have a mini map at the top of the screen, and it'll post enemies that are nearby, so you can kind of make a strategic plan with your teammate of how you're going to go about it, because you're gonna die. I mean, through the tutorial, I probably died like 20 times.
Oh wow!
Wow.
I was pretty terrible, but
yeah, I don't think I've ever had a game other than maybe Super Meat Boy where I've been able to tell someone you're gonna die within 10 minutes of playing this game about 300 times.
Trials, maybe.
Yeah, maybe Trials. Trials is probably the other exception.
And I don't think that's status quo. There's people that are better at these games than I am.
Yeah.
But just getting used to the controls and, used to the idea of line of sight, I just walk up in front of a guy and all of a sudden, you're not taking, you're taking damage. You're going to take damage. You've got to get away from them, get your teammate working. And it's also like you can confuse the AI. So if you and your teammate are on opposite sides of the guy and you're shooting him straight in the face, he's going to shoot you. But if you stop shooting and the guy above him starts shooting at him for a long enough time, the AI is going to switch enemies. So as you end up fighting a bigger group, you can continue to kind of circle your way around these enemies, flank them, and you could go through the whole game without dying by really planning out your attack. The weapons were pretty simple. I saw a shotgun, a assault rifle, a kind of like a photon rifle, and then there's this grapple. I'm just using it because people are familiar to it, but kind of like Bullet Storm, where you can pull guys to you. And also like Bionic Commando, where you can use it to climb your way up the level. You can grab your teammate. So if he's an idiot like I was and the developer needed me to get somewhere, he would just like shoot me with this grapple thing and pull me up to where he was.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah, it does sound cool.
It was smart because it just really allowed for you to say, okay, it's got a lot of replayability. It seems like the levels they're always there, but the AI is going to continue to change. They're going to continue to react to where you are. So I really think that will be that's going to be I don't even know if it's going to end up being a sleeper hit. I think a lot of people are starting to cover it. I believe I was at one of the panels that they said it was like their game of the show. They loved it. So I'm really excited for that. I think I didn't get a release date on it, but they said they're pretty close to done.
Yeah, and that's another game that I think when I was talking to the developers before PAX, they were telling me, we're not exactly sure the platforms yet, but our goal is, PlayStation Network and XBLA. So that's definitely something I'm hoping happens now that you've told me a little more about it.
And these guys are – these aren't just guys. This is their first game, but they're not from nowhere. They're from Bungie.
Yeah.
I saw Halo 3 name drop next to this game, and that intrigued me.
Yeah. That's one of the really interesting things that you're seeing a lot with, you know, these XBLA games is that these aren't nobodies. These are guys with history in the industry. Like, Orcs Must Die is being done by the guys who've done Ensemble Studios for the past, you know, however many years. And now they've been working on, you know, like, Age of the Empires for, like, 10-plus years. And they're like, let's do something original now. I want to, you know, work with a new IP now that we've, you know, formed Robot. And they came up with this awesome idea, like, Orcs Must Die. And you got, you know, Skulls of the Shogun, which is a bunch of ex-EA veterans. I mean, a lot of these guys have been working on some crazy, amazing games. Like, if you go look at the head guy over there is Jake Casdale, I think. And if you go look at his, you know, just like Moby Games page, you're like, holy cow, this guy's worked on some of the best games in the industry. Then, you know, Fallen Frontier is Bungie. I mean, it's great.
That's cool that you mentioned that because it reminds me of Double Fine as well. And you see a lot of these industry vets doing this sort of thing. They're taking risks and making really unique games, something you wouldn't necessarily see very much on retail, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's great to see, you know, both the industry vets and then, you know, the indie games. And then also, you know, what's become known as, like, you know, your standard XBLA type of guys like Twisted Pixel. I mean, Twisted Pixel has two games they're working on.
Yeah.
Did either of you guys get a chance to play either of them?
I got about 5 minutes with Miss Motion Man, and the Gunstringer line was insane all weekend.
Oh, I figured.
I didn't get into that. I'll just say, though, that the line in general for Twisted Pixel was insane all weekend. And the only reason I got into Misplosion Man is because I was waiting in one line while a friend was waiting in that line. And once he got up there, he was playing, and me and him, like, split the demo. He did the first 5 minutes. I did the second 5 minutes.
Nice.
And the problem, though, with that game is that I think a lot of people demoing that weren't veterans of Explosion Man, because me and him were both, you know, pretty hardcore players of that game. We got through it, and the demo was just crazy easy for us, so we made it through in about a fourth the time that most people were getting through. And it was just basically like Explosion Man, but with a bow on his head at that point, though. There was really nothing there of substance to, like, say that this game is just insanely different other than what I had seen at the Twisted Pixel panel. They had, like, the Twisted Pixel Variety Hour, and there's a lot shown there that was not shown at the booth.
What type of stuff was shown at the Variety Hour?
The coolest thing was co-op allows one person to be Explosion Man and one person to be Miss Explosion Man, and oh, cool. There was this level they were showing that was like a like bouncy ball kind of going around like on a block breaker game where it just hits off every wall. And there was like a maze that you had to get it through. You'd have to like work together and get on different levels and then explode by the ball to like kind of deflect it this one way. And then Mr. Explosion Man, or just Explosion Man, I guess, would be on the next level. He'd like explode it back the other way, and then she would work her way up there, and you'd work together and you'd try to get this ball to go in this, like fuse cell or whatever, where it would like unlock the next part of the maze. And then you go in there and do the next one. That was really cool. Because it was like Explosion Man, but it made the game seem completely different. Instead of being a hardcore, like, twitchy speedrunning kind of game, it turned into a thinker's, like a thinking man's game. And it's like, exactly what angle do I have to bank this in order to get it up to you? And that was really cool looking.
Excellent.
Honestly, I think that has me more intrigued than just knowing, you know, it's Explosion Man with the bow. Because as much as I enjoyed Explosion Man, it wasn't exactly one of my absolute favorite games, but knowing that they're adding some kind of more unique elements to it, especially with co-op, that's something that's going to get me to definitely check it out again.
Yeah.
And Gunstringer, to me, kind of just looks a little bit like as if Comic Jumper was, you know, given Kinect controls.
Yeah, it looked really cool. I wanted to play it, but I was not willing to wait, like, over an hour to play it, whatever it was.
It was really surprising. I have to admit, Andrew, like I was over there in the mornings, and I chatted with one of the guys that was running the booth there, and he's like, "Oh yeah, you know, it was Sunday," and he's like, "Yeah, it's been busy. It's been nice." And I come over at the end of the day, and he's like, I can't even talk anymore. So Twisted yeah. Pixel, they had a lot of attention. And I think it had to do a lot with I heard that PAX East last year didn't have the kind of AAA titles that this year did. And though, you know, there wasn't a ton, you know, Darkness 2 and Battlefield 3, LA Noir and SWTOR, you know, they had 3-hour, 4-hour, 5-hour lines. So people, you know, checked out the indie stuff, checked out the downloadable stuff. And I think it's getting to the point where it doesn't matter whether it's downloadable, whether it's $20 or $60. They're reaching like even keel when it comes to quality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I it kind of bugged me a little about Twisted Pixel's booth, though. I don't know if this is something that bugged you too, Steven, but they had 5 machines there, and 3 of them were, in my opinion, wasted on Splosion Man, Comic Jumper, and the Maw, where they could have just had multiple lines for their new IPs. And there was rarely anyone ever playing those other games, and I just looked around and I was like, ah, man, I'd really like to have another line just with this Explosion Man at this point.
Yeah, that baffled me too, because, I mean, you look at, like, Behemoth did it right. They had one arcade cabinet for at Castle Crashers, and it was beautiful. I was chomping at the bit to play it because they did this great custom work on the side for the Castle Crashers. They built all the controls in. It was gorgeous, but everything else was their new game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, like the Battle Block Theater. So it was unfortunate they missed out on letting more people get their hands on their new IP, but they were also, you know, those smaller developers, I guess maybe they've got the Maw up there because they're selling the Maw stuffed animals. So yeah. they want some reason for someone to buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would be fine with that if they weren't so limited. Like if they were one of those people that had 20 TVs and go ahead and put them on a couple of them. But when you were so limited and a lot of your space would be Kinect space for Gunstringer, then I just looked around and said, man, I really wish Mr. Explosion Man was not right there. That was Mrs. Explosion Man.
Rather cheat on him with the wife.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of Battle Block Theater, I actually just saw, you know, the introduction video this morning. That thing was hilarious. So did either of you guys get a chance to play that game?
I did. Did you, Steve?
I got some experience with it, but I had a great experience with the developer.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. I'll speak for the game. Then the game for me, that was probably the one I was most excited for because I love Castle Crashers and I like Alien Hominid and I don't know, Tom Fulp's kind of like a hero of mine, so like anything that comes out under that title, Behemoth, I'm all about. But the game just didn't blow me away like the first time I played Castle Crashers, blew me away. And it was kind of tough to figure out. I still don't even understand what I was doing. It seemed like me and my friend were playing a little like co-op, but at the same time, screw your neighbor kind of deal, because you'd have to work together in some areas, but in some areas it pretty much force you to screw someone over in order to get to where you're going. And I really didn't understand what was going on that much. We figured it out, but we didn't know why we figured it out, you know?
Yeah. From what I've seen, that's something I actually really enjoy, is the whole ability to kind of screw over your neighbor when you're playing these kind of games. Because, like, I know when I was playing, it was Lara Croft at E3 this last year, I was playing as Lara Croft, and the developer's like, hey, listen, you know, you can just drop Toe Tech. And he just kept trying to get me to, you know, kill, you know, my partner on this stuff, just because, I mean, they just love seeing it sometimes. It's funny, and then a lot of times when you have that ability, you know, to just kind of screw your partner, it just gets funny, and the game just gets, you know, a little bit more enjoyable. As long as it's one of those things where it's not like you'll never be able to progress anywhere because you're just, like, you know, punching each other the whole time.
Yeah. It seemed like that at some points, though, there'd be, like, these things you have to stand on to activate this, like, invisible bridge. And right under that bridge would be spikes. And you'd think, like, oh, what I'm going to do is jump off of this guy's head, knock him down on the spikes, and stand on the little bridge platformer thing. And you'd stand there, and the bridge would go out, and you try to jump to the next level, and it's like, all right, well, I left this guy on the other side of the bridge, and now I need him to jump off of his head to get to the next platform. We just couldn't figure it out. I don't know. I don't know what the issue was, but it seemed like a fun game. It looked awesome, just like Castle Crashers looks. I'm still fairly excited about it, but it was a bit of a letdown. Maybe I built it up to be too much.
They were trying something very new with that. I mean, it was. I wouldn't say that I was excited about it when I first looked at it, but I was playing with one of the level designers, and I think I was laughing for about an hour.
it was funny.
Just that experience. I mean, like the writing and everything like that as well, but just the experience of playing together. I think it's just kind of like, I mean, crossing platforms here, but Little Big Planet, like smacking each other around and throwing each other down holes, and the same thing in Super Mario, jumping off each other's heads. Those are the kinds of meta games that usually I actually told the Fallen Frontier I actually hate, and then 10 minutes later I was doing it in this game, and I just loved it. So I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. I do want to see more before, you know, like I'm not going to, I can't say, it's a behemoth game, so I will buy it. But I still need to see more to be really, really sold on it. But I did want to share, I'm not going to give away anything, but, you know, XBLAfans.com, we're going to be doing a big stuff at the end of the month, going into April, and we've got a few articles going up that'll be focused on some stuff Behemoth's doing, and some Castle Crashers, and I just happened to go over to them and told them that, you know, like we were doing stuff for the site. I'm brand new to the site, and I want to push, you know, I push interest to them because they're a great developer, and they gave us some really, really cool stuff to give out to our maybe our podcast listeners or those going to the site. So keep an eye out for that stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I even got to sit down and eat dinner with the guys at Friday night after the exhibition hall was closed, and they're very, very down to earth. They really love what they're doing, and they want to know what people think. They were just grilling me on everything.
Yeah.
I think they're a good example of a smaller developer, yes, that is just, they're doing all the right things.
That's one thing I've just loved about, you know, working within the game industry is just how down to earth the majority of, you know, developers and the people that you just like, you know, picture when you think of gaming. And most of them just love talking to their fans, and they love talking to, you know, about their games and about just games in general. And it's just great to be able to get the opportunity to talk to some of them at conventions like this.
They're also, that all of them are hilarious.
Yeah.
It gets into the game, but, you know, if you're a fan of Behemoth, you know, stop by their tables or send them an email, let them know about how you like the game. They're very, very, friendly. But yeah, I mean, I'm waxing about them. They're great guys.
Yeah.
We could move on.
Yeah. It's very clear, you know, just watching that trailer for Battle Block Theater that, like, you know, humor is within their DNA, and it's just like, that's their core. I mean, they're going to keep going back to that with every game they make, even though everything is, you know, exceptional on the gameplay end as well. Did any of you guys get a chance to check out Dishwasher Dead Samurai? Or Vampire Smile?
Yeah.
I don't know why it says Dead Samurai.
Dishwasher. Yeah.
My notes are a couple years behind.
Well, you know, it is an indie game. I will admit they kind of got the short end of the stick. They got into the indie area.
No man's land.
Yeah. It was kind of like it was in between the escalators or in the corner. So a lot of the stuff that was in there just didn't get as much eyes on as it should have. But these guys, they have they're a great little studio. It's like, three guys. The main guy, James, and Dustin is doing marketing, and then James' girlfriend is helping with design now. She's the, like, what do you call her? The art unicorn. So it's the game itself is – I don't want to – for those of you that haven't played the first game, you're a dishwasher. Nobody cares about you. But, hell, Bruce Lee was a dishwasher, so they basically just said, you know, it continues on that – side-scrolling beat 'em up of very dark environments. I don't know how to best describe the art design, but just gothic black and white.
Yeah.
They did add a little bit more color, just in the sense of some of the guys you're fighting have like green eyes, or there's a lot of there's just as much blood as there was in the first one, if not more. But what they did with this one, that it didn't, it they weren't actually able to show it. It's going to be in stereoscopic 3D. So if anyone out there does have a 3D TV, it's going to be, I think it's going to be the first game released on the 360 that has 3D. And from that, I have to say that the level design is something you can see. I bet you it looks great in 3D, but the front portion of the screen is either very dark black because they're trying to show the depth of the room, or they're adding a lot of water on the, like, on the forefront. So it's just like wasted screen when you're not looking at it in 3D, because it's like they built a box. They built the game in a box, and they had to show you, you know, this is how far in the box the screen is. So that was a little disappointing. They do add a little bit of a little bit more when it comes to variety in how the game plays, because it does allow co-op. The co-op game includes the girlfriend from the first game. I won't spoil why she's there and how what she can do, but there was also, they added like a Guitar Hero moment in it, where he's playing guitar and she's playing the violin, and you've got to mash the buttons. And it went on for about 5 minutes of the amount of time I played. It took forever. I couldn't hear it all that well, so I didn't know if the music was all that great. And then it ended, and it affected nothing. Just like, okay, this was here to do something, and I couldn't figure out what. That being said, it's still a great side-scrolling beat 'em up. It's anyone who played the first game will enjoy this one. It looks like it was a full demo of the game. So if any fans, you know, whoever did actually get over there, they could play pretty much any level they wanted. So that game's I think coming out April 6th.
Yeah, coming out soon.
Yep, right. That's on correct. XBLA. Yeah. Yep.
So I got a chance to stop by, and I pretty much didn't do my job on this one. I just kind of talked to Dustin personally, yeah. Me and my
Dustin's
friend.
A funny guy.
Yeah, it pretty much just turned into just three guys talking, and we didn't really ask many questions. But one thing I did ask, I said that by far my favorite thing that James has done is I made a game with zombies in it. I like that way more than I like the dishwasher. I was like, is there anything like that coming out? And his girlfriend, I guess, was the other one in the booth. Steve, is that who that was?
Mm-hmm. I believe so.
Okay, so she basically told me that when James has odd different ideas, he looks for the Xbox Live Indie Games section to explore those ideas. So, you know, she wouldn't announce anything, but she said that he has some things that he would like to do very similar to that, where it's like a 20-minute just insane song where you play something during it. So I'm hoping something like that comes out soon, because that was one of my favorite games.
That would be awesome.
We also got a chance to chat with James on a interview that we'll be posting the interview on the site. And he did talk about the same thing. The idea that when he's in the middle of working on, you know, dishwasher, and he's got some other ideas, he doesn't kill those ideas. He goes out, he gives them a try. So he said, you know, like he's still going to be continuing to do an indie title here and there, or work on another full title. He's got, he did suggest, you know, it, through conversation, that there's something else coming. They are working on something else that he can't really announce just yet. But, you know, you also have to keep in mind there's a small developer, and this is a, you know, another big title for them. You know, when it's not an indie game, so he said, you know, we still need the support from our audience. So anyone out there that, you know, had tried out Dishwasher, give it a shot, because end of the month you'll get the sequel. And did he announce pricing on that? I think he said, I think it was 800.
Yeah, I want to say 800 as well.
Yeah, I want to say that too. I don't remember though. I asked almost every developer price, and I don't remember
any of them.
Yeah, I remember most people just being very coy about it.
I guarantee you'll remember if you ever hear someone say $20 though.
I didn't understand that. A lot of people gave me a $20 price, but they were like, "You're shooting for like maybe $20," and I'm just thinking like, "That ain't ever gonna work. You better knock that down to 10.
Knock it down to 15 at least. You know, the 1200 mark. Don't start pushing the new 1600.
Yeah, there's maybe 4 or 5 games on the marketplace right now that are 1600, and not many of them do well.
Really, what games are really that much right now?
Penny Arcade was.
I want to say Penny Arcade is the only game I ever remember being wicked expensive when I'm like, I'm not buying this.
Wasn't
the Sam and Max games.
Yeah, but didn't the Sam and Max games want to, you know, come with, you know, full seasons of stuff? So it was like multiple.
They say that, but it's a 10-hour point and click experience.
True.
How are you going to charge $20 for that? I don't know. It's just my opinion, but I think there might have been a few more, but I'm blanking on them right now.
All right, well, speaking of, you know, those kind of indie studios, you guys get a chance to check out Fez. I mean, that's one game I've played, and I know I'm extremely excited for this now.
Yeah, I tried it. Did you try it, Steve?
No, and I have to admit that when it comes to the style that Fez has, there's something that turns me off. Not that all of them. By any means, but when I see something that's like harkening back to the classic 8-bit or something like that, I was looking around and it's right next to like Shoot Many Robots and, you know, the Capcom booth, and I just said
pretty colors, explosions, robots. I'm gonna go look at those.
Being beside Capcom really doesn't help if somebody doesn't like those old looking graphics, because Capcom is the probably most colorful developer out there. They're crazy with their games. But I did get a chance to try Fez. I liked it a lot. It was the only game that I was willing to put the headphones on that every other gamer had put on. I don't know about you, Steve, but that was the thing with me all weekend, is that if it had headphones, I was just playing without sound, because I was not putting those on my head.
Yeah. I wore a hat.
Yeah, Fez was different though, because I figured that sound really added to that game after seeing a few of those trailers, and it did in a way, because the whole thing with Fez is that you use the right and left bumpers to like rotate the world and get different perspectives of it, and that'll allow you to platform your way through the world. And there was this one section where I jumped in what looked like a hole in the wall, and then I rotated the world so that I was now inside this building. And when I did that, the audio muffled like what would happen if you were inside the building and like something was going on outside.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
I thought that was really cool. And a few of the things I didn't like, though, were I tried to turn it into Super Meat Boy. I watched 3 people play it before me, and I knew exactly what to do. I just wanted to platform
try to speed run it
as fast as possible. Yeah. It doesn't support that. Like, I tried to, like, jump on 3 platforms in a row just running the entire time and then just tapping A, like, a Twitch reaction when I landed, and it really makes you kind of, like, stop, think, re-jump, stop, think, re-jump. I jumped off the cliff, and I looked like a terrible gamer because of that many times, because I just thought it would be responsive like Meat Boy was. And another thing I didn't like is when I climbed these vines, there's vines on the side of this little house you're trying to make your way to the top of. Climb these vines, and it didn't support diagonal directions. I had to go climb up, down, left, or right. It wasn't like Braid when you start climbing the side walls or whatever, and you can kind of go at an angle and, you know, cut time that way. I don't know. It was just me trying to cut time. It didn't allow that. But other than that, the game was solid. I liked it a lot.
I really like the music.
The music's awesome. It's got that very 8-bit sound. It's got that 8-bit look, which I love.
I love that too.
I love it when like games like Scott Pilgrim flourish, because they look like they were developed 15 years ago, but they're still great in this day and age. And I feel like Fez is definitely that game. It's definitely a thinking man's game, though.
Yeah.
There are some things that are going to take you a while to figure out.
Thinking man's game.
The thing I love is the whole thing is, you know, I mean, the 8-bit style really works for this because the whole thing's built around like squares. And I mean, you just keep rotating the cubes, you know, basically as you're moving along in the game. And it's just really, really unique that they're actually forcing you to kind of look in that extra dimension. Like, you're trying to see, you know, okay, if I zoomed out and, you know, like had a 3D view of this, what path could I take? And it's really interesting.
Did you guys ever play, or do you ever have PSP at all? There was a game for that called, I'm blanking on the name, it was called like Crush or something like that. It was kind of the same idea, whereas you were trying to solve an environmental puzzle and you had to use the left and right bumpers to kind of change the perspective of the world, which would open up new areas and new ways to solve things. That sounds kind of like this. And it looks really interesting. It looks really promising. I really like the music. Like I said, I saw the music in the trailers. And like the 8-bit look, I thought was really cool too.
Yeah, it looks like it could be, you know, like this year's, you know, kind of Braid, Limbo, that type of game. Where, I mean, it's not something you're going in for action and, like, you know, crazy explosions and color. Though there is a lot of color to that game, but
it's an experience.
It's an experience, almost more than a game. And
that's good.
I know Steve's mentioned this a couple times, but you guys check out Shoot Many Robots?
I did.
Yeah.
What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, no, I was pretty happy with it. I got to chat with the developers. I was checking out their booth because they were doing the Design Many Robots contest, which
is cool.
Yeah, that was really nice to see. There was a lot of talent with just the fans building their robots. There was a lot of great artwork up, and the game itself. Yeah, you're shooting many robots. You're murdering your toaster. I love that. So it's, you know, it's side scrolling. There's a lot coming at you. You can play co-op. I know we've probably said that a few times in this episode, and. I think that's a good thing. I really like having that co-op. Yeah. It's the side-scrolling beat-em-up has returned with a fervor.
Yeah. Did you think the controls were wonky on this? Because I kind of did.
Yeah. I was surprised by... I felt like I should have been doing something, you know, either a half second before or after I had told it to. Yeah. So I don't know if that was something with the controllers. I did ask the developer about it, and he said that they were having some problems with a delay that they were still working on or something like that. But it didn't seem to bug me. I got my, you know, after about 5 minutes, I got a handle on it.
Yeah, I really meant like the way they're mapped though. Like it seemed like they wanted me holding the left trigger the whole time, and I don't know about you, but natural to me is hold the right trigger the entire time. And
that might
like if
it.
They would allow me to remap them myself, then I would be totally fine. But I hope those controls get a little reworking or like customized options, because that was the sole reason that I was not that good at this game, was that I was always hitting the wrong button because. It was very similar to many other games I played, and the controls were completely different.
I'm left-handed, so I don't know if that might have done something, but I actually felt like, so I guess I felt pretty good about it. So even though it was different from other games, it felt comfortable in my hands, and maybe that might be something that I hope they do look into. At the very least, I think every game should have that option of being able to change the controls to your hands. You know,
yes, definitely.
You bought the controller. I don't know how difficult that is to put that into a game, but I can't imagine it's too much.
Looks like we got a dog at the moment. I'm assuming Ross can just edit this out.
Your toaster's alive.
Sorry, yeah, I'm going to have Ross edit this out. I'll be right back.
Okay. Small yappy type dogs.
Yeah.
This is the best.
Oh, man. Shoot Many Robots, they were ecstatic about their space.
They took care of you, did they not? The second I handed them a card and they thought, okay, this guy writes somewhere, they're just like, okay, we're giving you the demo station, you're playing with the developers, like two guys were telling me about the game. Did you get that kind of treatment too?
Yeah, I actually...
They were, like, super excited to, like, talk to media. Yeah, yeah. All right,
that's one of the nicest things about, you know, indie studio type things is they're always excited anytime they get to talk to anybody who's related to the press. And it's just like, that's something completely new sometimes to me. Just when, I mean, I've worked in this industry for a while now, and a lot of times, you know, you have to hearken and like bug people and be at their door, you know, a lot to be able to get their attention. But then when you start working with a lot of these indie type studios, they're just like, we want to work with you, please, please, please. And it's like, I love this. It's great. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a complete reversal in a sense.
Mm-hmm. I actually, what was that? I was at the Shogun, the Skulls of the Shogun. And I had an appointment at 9 o'clock. I'm there at 9, and G4 walks over, and they're going to do an interview, you know, do a video and everything. And the guy, you know, like, He's been in the industry for a long time, and he looked at me and he actually asked me, he's like, are you okay with backing up so I can see these guys first? I was like, yeah, kick me out of your way.
Yeah.
I'm not G4.
No, yeah. And it's great to see that kind of, you know, respect in a sense too, where a studio, you know, despite the fact that you're not G4, still, you know, treats you like you're G4.
Yeah, no, it was really nice, and I had that experience like around the whole room. There wasn't anybody that you know gave me a
cold chill,
gave me a hard time, or didn't show me a lot of attention.
Yeah,
so I'm not exactly that familiar with Shoot Many Robots. Can you give me kind of a breakdown on it?
It's like side scrolling kind of Contra-ish. You just walk one direction and shoot the entire time, just kill anything.
So basically, you shoot many robots.
Yeah. And I asked if the many robots contest, or whatever it's called, is it's got online like user generated contest for like an F-plus level builder. I was like, do you have a thing in the main menu where you design your robots? They're like, no, you gotta draw a picture, send it in, use Photoshop. If you're a 3D modeler, then you can do it that way. So people know that that is not included in the game, but they will be taking the best submissions and making a DLC eventually.
Very cool.
That was pretty cool. And then they'll be in the game. There'll be levels with those robots attacking you. It was pretty fun, though. I aside from the weird controls, I did have fun with it. I just felt like I would be a lot better if the controls were more customized for me. And the one thing I thought also was really cool was the character customization. You get to mess with that at all?
Yes, yeah.
Where your guy had like a beer helmet and like a special pair of pants or something like that. There's like, I think they said 200 options for all your different like clothing things, which actually affected the game.
I was surprised by how many people I saw when I was walking by the booth having different characters. So I imagine they continued to demo that, and I think that that's great. I mean, any game where I can better, you know, personify myself in it, I like it. Like, you know, of course you connect with, you know, the Spartans and the Kratos and all that stuff, and they have great stories to tell. But at the shorter or the smaller level, if the character isn't too design heavy, why not? You know, why not give the player a little bit more? And especially with Shoot Many Robots. I mean, it's, you know, they're doing the design contest. There's a lot of different options. So, no, I was really happy seeing that. And it was neat. It was neat to look through how many options they had.
Yeah.
All right, it looks like we're back to the two favorites we had ahead of time. And I think, Steve, you said your favorite was Bastion?
Yes.
You want to tell me a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, first, I'll tell you, I was in, I was at a indie party. It was made in Massachusetts, indie party at MIT Thursday night. And there's a game called Bastion there. That is not the game that I'm talking about here. I told the guy, it's basically an HTML Dungeons and Dragons game. That's going to just run a web game. And I told him, I'm like, do you know that there is a big title named Bastion coming out soon? And he looked like I just told him his mom died. And there's a subtitle, but yeah, hopefully he changes the name of that game. And they're a year out, but, Bastion, the real one, the one that, they only just received news that WB picked them up. So they had a major booth, which was packed all the time. And then they had one solo TV and controller in the WB area by the Mortal Kombat booths and everything. And luckily, no one seemed to find that. So I got on it right away. I went back to it about four times. And what I was talking about when I said that this is a game of action RPG and sports commentary, there is dynamic play and dynamic dialogue. The guy who's a person who talks all the time, like narrating. So it's a dynamic narration. Yeah. So as you play through the game, the actions you take in the game will affect how the game is being narrated.
Yeah.
Now, I think he said there was something like, there were over thousands of lines of dialogue taken for this narration. And originally I was concerned, and that's why I kept going back, was because I was concerned that this would get repetitive or very, very simplistic and boring, but never. And I played differently. We're running by enemies just to continue on, and he would say that, looked like he didn't really want to mess with him. So that was pretty amazing. They did an excellent job with that. The style, the guys that are working on it were working on RTSs. So it's almost like a cube-based floor, and the floor is kind of being built ahead of you as you are running. So that was really nice. The art design is very friendly. What were you saying?
It was really interesting, the way that the level just kind of developed in front of you. I would like to have seen, a boss develop in front of you. I didn't get to see that much of it, but I'd like to see, what kind of player reactions that triggers when all of a sudden the thing that formed right in front of you is now in your face and wants to fight. I really wanted to see something like that. Was there anything like that?
They were talking about when I ran up to when I
sorry, Jesus, is some guy driving a motorcycle up and down our street.
All right, so it looks like we're going to have to edit Tyler out again.
Oh, Christ. I'm just trying to curve my microphone. I'm like, please don't get any louder, and it just drives right by, and it's just loud as can be. God damn. Oh, great, now there's an ice cream truck coming. Shit.
Oh, at least we can get the ice cream on there. I love ice cream.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I'm okay with seeing that. Maybe we can get little kids to listen to it.
Maybe we can do a little, 5 minute of just hearing the.
All right, I apologize. But, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all good, dude.
It's not your motorcycle.
Yeah. Unless you're riding a motorcycle in the house while we're trying to record a podcast, I think we can deal with it.
Hey, you guys mind if I try this motorcycle real quick? I know you're talking about video games.
Yeah. I'm doing Skype from my phone, and I'm going to go, test drive a, I don't even know what's the loudest car I can think of.
Oh, crazy.
Well, getting back to it, you'd asked if, when they pop up, is anything occur in the commentary or in the narration. There was, I think they were calling them gassies or gas creatures. Mm-hmm. So when one of the first couple would pop up, they're like, oh, here's, this gas creature. So it seemed like almost every time a new enemy popped up on screen, you would be told what creature type it was. Yeah. And they would usually, he would give you a subtle hint on, what you're going up against. So the first gassy guy was you should really, get in this guy's face. So melee attacking this first bigger, I'm going to keep calling it a gassy because I think that's what they called it. It seemed like I ripped through him pretty easy. And then there was some little spirit sperms. That's not what they're called, but that's what they look like. And they're like, oh, you could pick these guys off easy. So I ripped them apart, and he's like, oh, he made quick work of those.
Is that the bow and arrow you use to kill? I've seen some guy killing some things with some bow and arrows.
Yeah. There's bow and arrow. There's melee. You do pick up weapons as you go. They weren't really hidden, but I did notice while I was fighting through the levels, you can break up the environment too. So there's columns that are on the sides that if you knock those off, you get some things to collect. I didn't figure out exactly what all that was, but almost everything on screen you could break. And I don't know if it's absolutely everything or if it's, you know, it's pretty much everything I ran into I could rip apart. But I did break up a certain area, and because I broke up that area, I pissed off one of the gassy guys, and he appeared. It's like, oh, you've awoken this guy. So I was like, well, that's, you know, maybe if you run by that area and you don't mess with that environment, you would never fight that enemy. So I'm very, very excited for that. My favorite game ever made was Diablo. So it's that idea. Action RPG plus me not having to make my own commentary of the game.
Yeah, the thing that I thought was interesting about the commentary and being the guy who likes to try to break games, this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to sit down and there's parts where like it's obviously triggered by which way you select to go, left or right or whatever. It'd be like, I knew I need to get the shield and I was going this route or something like that.
Yep.
Like, I wanted to see if you step back and then step back over, if he kept saying that over and over and over again. Like, that's the one thing I thought when I seen that, like, dynamic voice just happening on the spot. I was like, I wonder if that gets annoying if you forgot something and you had to go back to the other path or did you notice any of that going on?
I didn't fiddle with it, unfortunately. Okay. So I couldn't tell you whether that would happen or not.
All right.
And I think we're going to have to close out with this one, but your favorite of the packs was Gatling Gears, right, Andrew?
Yeah, I want to do a favorite and a least favorite.
Okay, we can definitely do that.
There was something that severely disappointed me. But yeah, Gatling Gears was by far my favorite. I don't know why. I think it's because I'm a dual stick guy, but another friend with me also loved it, and he's not a crazy dual stick player like I am. But it was just nonstop action. It was awesome. Bullet patterns. It was kind of like shmup mixed in there too, because on Assault Heroes, like the main thing is killing things before they get shots off. And on this one, it was, they're going to get shots off, find the safe place in the pattern, but also be hitting them the entire time. So it was kind of like the best of both worlds that collided for this game.
So you almost have that really stick, almost bullet hell kind of feel.
Yeah, and it had the left and right triggers do like tank bazooka shots and grenades. It was just really awesome. It had like airplanes attacking you plus ground troops attacking you. It was great.
Man, all this game needs is like rolling balls with physics and you'll be all over it, right?
Yes.
And a war maze.
Yes.
Tyler.
So what was your favorite game of the show? XBLA game, I guess, of the show, Steve?
I'm gonna say it's a tie between Bastion and Outland. I know we didn't talk about it much. It's a Ubisoft game, but it was gorgeous. And it was, you're gonna see it, but it was right at the Child of Eden booth, and it seemed like not a whole lot of people were seeing the XBLA, the downloadable titles that they had there, but Outland was, oh, yeah.
The Child of Eden booth was so colorful that I can't believe you managed to walk past it and not just get mesmerized.
Well, no. I was staring at the big screen. I think that was either the biggest or the second biggest screen in the room.
Oh, yeah. That thing was crazy.
It was gorgeous. Yeah, it was. But right actually behind that big screen, if you turn the corner, Outland was on like the inside wall. So wow. You couldn't even see it if you were walking by. You had to look for it.
Okay.
But yeah, that was one of my other favorites. And it was just it looks like, again, platforming. It had a Prince of Persia like parkour elements of jumping around the levels. But it had very dynamic concepts in the sense that like you'd have a platform in the middle of the level that you can barely reach and you would see your guy jump and he would actually grab onto the grass or moss of that level and then climb up onto the platform. There's a both light and dark side to the level, so sometimes you have to switch in between them to get through different puzzle problems. And it basically, if you do see any screenshots or videos of it, it does kind of look like the main character looks kind of like Tron, which was unfortunate, but still a fantastic looking game. Bastion and Outland, they're both going to be great. And if I'm going to pick my worst, I'm going to go with I'm going to go with Swarm. I had a little bit of time with it, and I don't want to get into it because I didn't have enough time to make a real strong opinion, but I walked by that demo so many times, and I hate hate their voices. I hate what they did with the art style. I don't care about those characters. I hope they all burn. I hope they all die, and I hope I never hear them again.
I think part of the fun, though, in that game is they want you to kill the swarmites.
Oh, okay. So, that's why.
They want you to be creative in how you kill them. So, I mean, by making them someone you don't really, you know, care that much about, it kind of lets you, you know, be a little more, you know, apt to find interesting ways to dismember them or whatnot.
Yeah. I think, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe I'll get my hands on and enjoy it. But if I don't like something, I don't want to see it. Not that I want to play an entire game filled with stuff I don't like.
Well, especially when you only have to wait, I think, a week, and it'll be out on Xbox Live Arcade.
Oh, well, there you go.
On March 23rd.
Ooh.
For anyone who's a fan of that game, I am not reviewing it. So, just so you're aware.
All right. My worst of show, or I guess just most disappointing, is a tie between one was Fire Pro Wrestling. That game, which is 10 minutes of not fun. They're really banking on, you know, how people like to buy any game with an avatar in it. They're really banking on that. It was awkward, controlled. There was weird, like, collision detection. It seemed like you'd be punching a guy and nothing to be having. It was constant, like, it was very wrestling-like, as in, like, you'd get on the turnbuckle to jump on somebody, and then they'd move at the last second, and now you're sitting on the ground for 5 seconds until you can get up. And then it was like that, back and forth. It was almost impossible to time things. And getting outside of the ring was an issue. Both times I played it, I ended up winning because the guy couldn't figure out how to get back in the ring. You get 10 seconds to get back in. It was just not fun. And it was right beside Trenched, and that just made it even seem less fun because you're looking over and you're just like drooling the whole time. Like, man, I wish I was playing that game. But another game that was super disappointing was Fancy Pants Adventure. I don't know if you got a chance to play that one, Steve. Did you?
I didn't.
Oh, my God. I played that. There was no line. I was like, yes, I'm waiting for this. I want to play that. There was no line. And then it was clear why there was no line after I played it, because apparently word had spread. I thought it was going to be Meat Boy and N+E, but it was just a multiplayer game where you're these little stick figures, and you fight over these little like circles that shoot out of a cannon. Whoever collects the most circles wins. And I was like, okay, so the multiplayer kind of sucks, but it was probably slapped on, and the single player is still awesome, right? So I asked the person demo and showed me the demo. I was like, so how do I play the single-player game? They're like, no, the single-player game is just like this. I was like, it's not like a speedrunny kind of game, like make your way through the level and collect these things? They're like, no, it's kind of like you make your way through certain areas and there's like computer guys that you collect these things against.
So kind of like Rascals where, you know, you're racing, you know, through a puzzle against computer people and it feels like multiplayer even though.
Yeah, definitely. Something like that, but Rascals is fun in this game.
Well, there's your distinction. This one's not fun.
Yeah, and it never had a line all weekend. And it's clear that to the people at the EA booth that they have a problem on their hands when you look over and Risk Factions, which has been out for years, has a line, and that game doesn't, and that game's supposed to be new. And Gatling Gears has a pretty, you know, formidable line, and I forget what their other game was, but every game was like,
their other game was Warp.
Or was it Warp?
No, Warp. Warp and Fez were in a different area.
It's part of the EA Partners games, so that's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that game was just not fun. It was a huge disappointment.
Kind of has an unfortunate name. I'm not sure how I like the name that much.
Fancy Pants Adventures.
Yeah, I didn't even notice if, like, everybody did have different colored pants. I didn't know if different colored pants gave you different abilities, because it just seemed like you jumped and you punched. That was it. You punch a guy, you knock him down, you go collect the dot, and then he comes and does the same thing to you.
Yay.
Yeah. Yay.
You haven't really got me excited for this now. I mean, I'm like, eh.
Well, we talked about it last week, and we were talking about the footage that we saw. We talked about it briefly. We hadn't seen the game yet, and we kind of thought that, you know, it looked interesting. It kind of had a Meat Boy N+ look to it, like Andrew said. That's kind of disappointing to hear that.
I was thinking it'd be kind of, you know, like an indie version of Sonic, but now that you're telling me it's, you know, this...
It's kind
of
like...
An indie version of a bad King Sonic of the Hill, multiplayer I think that was got the... tacked on.
I think the exact description they had on the screen there was like King of the Hill style of game. Or something.
God,
like
I hate
that.
King of the Hill. I don't even like King of the Hill in Halo or Call of Duty.
Nah, it's pretty terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to wrap it up for this week. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us again. I'm John, and I'd like to thank Andrew, Steven, and Tyler for joining us. And I'd like you guys to let us know if you were at PAX what your favorite game was and what your least favorite game was. And you can hit us up on Twitter at XBLAFans. And thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I'm glad two of us got to go to PAX this year. Had a lot of great stuff to talk about. So.
Yeah, you really should have been.
Yeah,
it was.
I know. I don't even mind.
Experience like no other.
Yeah, E3. Hopefully we'll be able to make it out to E3 again.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. All right. You guys can find me at @TylerTron on Twitter with a zero in Tron.
At Twix Printmatic.
And I am at The Married Gamer. Thank you, 8-Bit Boys and Girls.